Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I will also end the government policy of trying to socially engineer race and gender into every aspect of public and private life.
1 week ago, the Trump administration issued a two-week ultimatum for all schools, universities, and colleges to end all DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, or risk losing all their federal funding, as called for by the authors of the right-wing blueprint, Project 2025.
I am opposed to the Department of Education because I think it's the Department of Critical Race Theory.
With a two-week deadline, will universities surrender or resist? We'll speak with education scholar Juan Vasquez Heilig and Yale University philosopher Jason Stanley, author of Erasing History: How Fascists Rewrite the Past to Control the Future. Then, as Trump shares an illustration of himself wearing a crown and writes Long Live the King, we'll speak with The Lever's David Sirota on how Trump has been ruling through executive orders and Doge. He asks, how are the Democrats resisting? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The White House has warned Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to stop criticizing President Trump and sign an agreement to hand over $500 billion of rare earth minerals and other resources as payment for U.S. wartime aid. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz made the threat from the White House briefing room Thursday.
Zelensky publicly rejected this deal about the rare earth minerals. Where does that stand?
Well, we're going to continue to have he needs to come back to the table, and we're going to continue to have discussions about where that deal is going.
This comes after Trump lashed out at Zelensky, mocking him as a dictator without elections in an error-riddled rant on social media. Zelensky met in Kyiv Thursday with Trump's envoy to Ukraine, Keith Kellogg, but canceled a scheduled joint press conference after the talks. The U.S. has objected to a draft of a G7 resolution calling Russia the aggressor in its invasion of Ukraine. Separately, Reuters reports the U.S. is refusing to co-sponsor a U.N. motion backing Ukraine on the third anniversary of Russia's invasion. Meanwhile, Russian forces have advanced within 3 miles of the Ukrainian region of Dnipropetrovsk. On Thursday, a Russian missile killed at least one person, wounded three, when it slammed into an apartment high-rise in the city of Kherson. And the International Atomic Energy Agency is warning the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is currently operating with only one off-site power line due to fighting near the complex. Israel's military dropped leaflets across the Gaza Strip on Thursday, openly threatening the territory's entire population of more than 2 million people with forced displacement. The message, written in Arabic, references President Trump's mass expulsion plan with a threat to, quote, impose forced displacement upon you whether you accept it or not, unquote. The message also read, quote, the map of the world will not change if all the people of Gaza disappear from existence and no one will ask about you, unquote. This comes as Israeli officials are casting doubt over whether a prisoner exchange set for Saturday will proceed as planned after Israel claimed one of the four bodies handed over by Hamas Thursday was not the body of hostage Shiri Bibas. Hamas says the remains appear to have been mixed with other human remains taken from the rubble left behind by Israeli bombardment. Israeli President Isaac Herzog called it a shocking and horrific violation of the ceasefire agreement. And Trump's special envoy for hostage affairs, Adam Boehler, threatened Hamas with total annihilation. Hamas is due to release six living Israeli hostages Saturday in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian captives held by Israel. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he's ordered a stepped-up military operation across the occupied West Bank after three parked buses exploded in Bat Yam near Tel Aviv. No one was hurt in the blasts. The Trump administration's imposed sanctions on a Rwandan top official and a senior member of an armed group over their backing of M23 fighters in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The U.S. Treasury Department announced the sanctions Thursday, targeting Rwandan minister James Kabarabe and Lawrence Kanyuka Kingston, a member of the armed coalition Congo River Alliance, which includes M23. Both men are accused of being central to M23's operations as the group carries out gross human rights abuses. The Treasury Department said in a statement, quote, today's actions underscore the need for Rwanda to return to negotiations under the Angola-led Luanda process to achieve a resolution to the conflict in eastern DRC, unquote. To see our coverage of the Democratic Republic of Congo, go to democracynow.org. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum is warning the United States against any violations of Mexico's sovereignty after the Trump administration designated several drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. President Sheinbaum said Trump officials should refocus resources on investigating groups that are operating and laundering drug money inside the United States. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has not ruled out threats of military action against cartels. This is Mexican President Sheinbaum speaking to reporters Thursday.
El pueblo de México, bajo ninguna circunstancia,
the Mexican people will under no circumstances accept interventions, intrusions, or any other action from abroad that are detrimental to the integrity, independence, or sovereignty of the nation, such as coups, interference in elections, or violations of Mexican territory, whether by land, sea, or air.
The terrorist designation also includes the MS-13 gang, which is predominantly based in El Salvador, and Tren de Aragua in Venezuela. Trump has made false claims about the group's potential threats, wrongfully accusing all asylum seekers and immigrants of being gang members to fuel a racist agenda. The Trump administration said Thursday it had abruptly deported at least 177 Venezuelan immigrants who'd been detained in a newly constructed prison camp at the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Dozens of the Venezuelan immigrants who were forcefully transferred to Guantanamo were accused without evidence of involvement with Tren de Aragua, as Trump claimed to be targeting only the worst of the worst. But recent reports showed many of them had never been convicted of violent crimes. Venezuela's interior minister was at the airport outside Caracas when the U.S. deportation flight arrived on Thursday.
The United States says that there are people from the Tren de Aragua gang and criminals. We checked the first group that they were said to be from Tren de Aragua, and there was no one from there, not one. We are going to check the legal situation of each one of them. Those without a record will go home, and we will take them, and we will take them with care.
Asylum seekers and immigrants have described torturous conditions while on U.S. deportation flights, including being shackled at the ankles, waist and wrists for hours. This comes as The Guardian reports the corporate conglomerate Akima, charged with running Guantanamo's immigrant detention camp, has been accused of gross human rights abuses over conditions at three other immigration jails it oversees. President Trump has rolled back a Biden-era program granting temporary relief from deportations to an estimated 500,000 Haitian immigrants living in the United States. Gerline Joseph, the executive director of the Haitian Bridge Alliance, told the Miami Herald, quote, slashing 6 months of protection while Haiti faces rampant insecurity and a humanitarian crisis is nothing short of a death sentence. This is racism in policy form, and we must resist it at every turn, she said. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has ordered the Trump administration to comply with his previous court order to at least temporarily unfreeze foreign aid funding. But U.S. District Court Judge Amir Ali stopped short of holding Secretary of State Marco Rubio and acting USAID Director Pete Morocco in contempt of court. Among the many programs impacted by the freeze are HIV and tuberculosis treatment, maternal and newborn health care, and humanitarian aid to 2.6 million people in northeastern Syria. The emergency response rooms in Sudan, a civilian aid group, said the aid freeze is already worsening famine and the world's worst refugee crisis, with a spokesperson telling the New York Times, quote, a week of not finding food would actually mean a lot of death, unquote. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. Thursday denied a request by unions to block the efforts by Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency to drastically slash the size of the federal workforce. In his ruling, U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper acknowledged the mass firings have already caused disruption and chaos, but said the issue should first be adjudicated by the Federal Labor Relations Authority. Earlier this month, Trump fired the FLRA chairwoman, Susan Sway Grunman, whose tenure was not set to end until July. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service has detected H5N1 bird flu in rats for the first time in a Southern California county where two recent poultry outbreaks were reported. The discovery comes as the USDA is seeking to rehire bird flu experts recently fired by DOGE. Meanwhile, a newly published CDC study finds two dairy workers in Michigan may have infected their pet cats with bird flu, and that one of the infected cats likely passed the virus on to other people. The results of the study were supposed to have been published in January, but were delayed by a blanket pause on CDC communications ordered by President Trump. Billionaire Elon Musk took the stage Thursday at the 2025 Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C., known as CPAC. Musk was welcomed to the far-right gathering by Argentina's President Javier Milei, who gifted Musk with a chainsaw to celebrate DOGE's efforts to shrink the federal workforce while gutting entire government agencies.
This is the chainsaw for bureaucracy. Chainsaw!
Also appearing at CPAC Thursday were Vice President J.D. Vance and Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson. The Senate has narrowly confirmed Kash Patel as director of the FBI, replacing Trump's former pick, Christopher Wray, who resigned his post just ahead of Trump's inauguration. Patel is a Trump loyalist, far-right conspiracy theorist who previously called for the FBI's D.C. office to be closed and the next day turned into a museum of the deep state. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin spoke out against Patel ahead of Thursday's vote.
It is shocking that my Republican colleagues are willing to support him, despite the serious threat he poses to our national security. And I'm sorry to say I believe they will quickly come to regret this vote. When I think of giving this man a 10-year tenure as director of the leading criminal investigative agency in the world, I cannot imagine a worse choice.
Patel's confirmation came on a vote of 51-49, with Republican Senator Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski voting against him. Vice President J.D. Vance, who was across town attending Thursday's CPAC conference, was not needed to break a Senate tie after Kentucky Republican, former Senate leader Mitch McConnell, voted in favor of Patel's nomination. McConnell announced Thursday he would not seek re-election in 2026 when his term expires. The Senate has approved a $340 billion budget blueprint to fund the first part of President Trump's agenda. The resolution passed on a largely party-line vote of 52-48 after a marathon overnight voting session known as a Votorama. It includes $175 billion for border operations and mass deportations, as well as $150 billion in new Department of Defense spending. This comes after the House Republicans unveiled a draft budget proposing $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and at least $1.5 trillion in spending cuts, including to Medicaid and food assistance. The Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor and Pensions voted along party lines Thursday to advance Linda McMahon's nomination to serve as education secretary, bringing her closer to heading the agency President Trump has repeatedly threatened to shut down. McMahon is the former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment. She and her husband, Vince McMahon, were recently sued for failing to stop a WWE ringside announcer from sexually assaulting young boys. New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced Thursday she will not invoke her authority to remove embattled New York City Mayor Eric Adams from office. Adams is up for re-election this year and faces a crowded primary in June. Murad Awalda, president of the New York Immigration Coalition, said in response, quote, Eric Adams sold out New Yorkers to avoid prosecution for corruption charges in a quid pro quo deal with the Trump administration, plain and simple. Now he's working with the Trump administration to separate families in New York City in direct violation of our local sanctuary policies. All New Yorkers will face real and dire consequences from Governor Hochul's refusal to hold the mayor accountable for his actions, he said. Protests are planned for Saturday at noon in Washington Square Park to demand Mayor Eric Adams' removal from office. Here in New York, Luigi Mangione, the 26-year-old suspect in the shooting death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, will appear in a Manhattan court today as he faces murder and terror state charges. This is Mangione's first hearing since his arraignment in December. A trial has not yet been set. Officials at the Vatican say Pope Francis's health is improving after the 88-year-old pontiff was hospitalized for double pneumonia and asthmatic bronchitis. But for the first time, cardinals acknowledge Pope Francis' resignation due to his ailing health is a possibility. And today marks the 60th anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X, one of the most influential political figures of the 20th century. Malcolm X was shot dead as he spoke before a packed audience at the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem, February 21st, 1965. He'd just taken the stage when shots rang out, riddling his body with bullets. He was 39 years old. Two of the three men convicted of Malcolm X's assassination were exonerated in 2021 after decades in jail and decades of advocacy on behalf of the men, Muhammad Aziz and Khalil Islam, and after a two-year investigation by the Manhattan DA's office and the Innocence Project found the prosecutors, the FBI, and the New York Police Department omitted key evidence around the murder. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration's given K through 12 schools and universities a two-week ultimatum to end DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion initiatives, or risk losing federal funding. In a letter sent on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1 week ago, to school administrators, the Education Department barred schools and colleges from, quote, using race in decisions pertaining to admissions, hiring, promotion, compensation, financial aid, scholarships, prizes, administrative support, discipline, housing, graduation ceremonies, and all other aspects of student, academic, and campus life, unquote. The Education Department has already canceled some $600 million in grants focused on training teachers on critical race theory, social justice, and other related topics. Meanwhile, the department's Office for Civil Rights has also declared race-based scholarships, cultural centers, and even graduation ceremonies illegal. The president of the American Council on Education, which represents more than 1,600 colleges and universities, said in a statement, quote, there's nothing specific enough for us to be able to act on in 14 days unless we just wipe the slate clean. He added, overcompliance, anticipatory compliance, preemptive compliance is not a strategy. The strategy needs to be much more considered, much more nuanced, unquote. This comes as Trump's pick to head the Department of Education, Linda McMahon, cleared a committee vote Thursday, and her nomination now heads to the full Senate, where it's expected to be approved. Trump has told reporters he wants McMahon to dismantle the Department of Education.
Why nominate Linda McMahon to be the Education Department Secretary if you're going to get rid of the Education Department?
Because I told Linda, Linda, I hope you do a great job and put yourself out of a job. I want her to put herself out of a job. Education Department.
Linda McMahon is the former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment and a major Trump donor. During her confirmation hearing earlier this month, she was questioned by Democrat Chris Murphy on Trump's order banning diversity, equity and inclusion, DEI.
My son is in a public school. He takes a class called African-American History. If you're running an African-American history class, could you perhaps be in violation of this court order, of this executive order?
I'm not quite certain, and I'd like to look into it further and get back to you on that.
For more, we're joined by education scholar Julian Vasquez-Heilig, professor of educational leadership, research, and technology at Western Michigan University. His new piece is headlined U.S. Department of Education's 14-day ultimatum on equal opportunity. Will universities surrender or resist? He also helped organize the coalition defending the freedom to learn and served leader with the NAACP on education and other issues. Thanks so much for being with us. It's great to have you here. Professor, can you start off by talking about the response a week ago on Valentine's Day when university and college presidents across the United States got a letter that said NDEI, and I want to ask you exactly what that means, in 2 weeks or lose all of your federal funding. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars across the United States.
Right. Well, first of all, Amy, thank you so much for having me on your show. Just glad to join you. I want to say that I think that the higher education community, also the K-12 community, understands that this letter from the U.S. Department of Education doesn't carry the force of law. We do know, of course, that what's happening in Washington, D.C. is that there is they're using resources, finances as a lever. So we've seen, for example, funding from the NSF, from the NIH, IES, at Western Michigan University, for example, we've lost $20 million in grants in the College of Education and Human Development. And so they're really using the power of the purse to attempt to enforce these different, abolishing the Department of Education with this letter. But I think it's been really bewildering to K-12 and higher education, which my understanding is the goal. I mean, the Office of Management and Budget, the director there, has said that's really the goal of this blitzkrieg is for all of these requests to be bewildering. But I know in higher education it's been very difficult, and so you have cabinets, presidents, provosts trying to understand what are going to be the impacts of this. You could see six-figure, seven-figure, eight-figure reductions in research funding. Our attempts to find the cure for cancer, to solve the teacher shortage, to create more efficient energy, all those things are under threat, because over the last 100 years or so, higher education has seen large investments from the federal government, and historically, those investments, that search to solve the teacher shortage and create more efficient energy, et cetera, they didn't come with strings attached. And now institutions, higher education institutions and K-12 districts are facing millions of dollars in reductions if they don't pause DEI. Now, you mentioned in your lead up, what is DEI? And I think it's important to talk about what DEI is actually. DEI is not reverse discrimination. What DEI does is, as educators, and I taught fourth grade, I taught ESL, I've taught college students, doctoral students, what DEI does is it helps us to create more success for historically marginalized communities. So we want to ensure that African-American students, that they, when we bring them to our campus, that we graduate them. Latino students, students with disabilities, veterans. It's a wide spectrum. And so I think it's important to understand that DEI is not reverse discrimination. It's our attempts to ensure success for all students on our campus, close those gaps, those equity gaps in graduation rates, in retention rates. That's what DEI work does. That's why we have Black graduation ceremonies or Mexican American graduation ceremonies. We want to create the climate. We want to create the opportunity for students when they come to us in higher education, when they come to us in our K-12 schools. We want them to be successful. We want all students to be successful, whether they're Jewish or have disabilities, et cetera. That's what DEI is. And so it's not about reverse discrimination. It's about student success, faculty success, staff success.
I want to go to a 2023 video on Donald Trump's campaign platform website in which he proposes taking, quote, billions and billions of dollars that we'll collect by taxing, fining and suing excessively large private university endowments to create what he calls the American Academy.
Whether you want lectures or ancient histories or an introduction to financial accounting or training in a skilled trade, the goal will be to deliver it and get it done properly using study groups, mentors, industry partnerships, and the latest breakthrough in computing. This will be a truly top-tier education option for the people. It will be strictly non-political, and there will be no wokeness or jihadism allowed. None of that's going to be allowed. Most importantly, the American Academy will compete directly with the existing and very costly four-year university system by granting students degree credentials that the U.S. government and all federal contractors will henceforth recognize. The Academy will award the full and complete equivalent of a bachelor's degree.
I mean, this is very significant, Julian Vasquez Heilig, that Trump is proposing an alternative American education system. We already know what happened with his Trump University. He was successfully sued for this for-profit college. But talk about what he is proposing, the American Academy.
So first, I want to say, and then I'll directly address the question. First, I want to say that universities are not ideological. So do we have folks on our campus who are on the right or on the left? Do we have students who are on the right, on the left? Do we have students who are apolitical? Absolutely. But universities are not ideological. They're places of learning. They're the places where the difficult conversations happen. So I think that's the first thing to say. All of the politicians that you see making pronouncements about universities, they all attended universities. Some of them, the elite Ivy Leagues, the president and vice president, for example. So I think that's important to say. I think the second important to say is that this is expected. I want to take you back in history, okay? Be a scholar for a moment here. If you think about the dictator Pinochet and what he did after he took over the country of Chile, he understood that as a part of the autocratic playbook, that you have to privately control and privatize education. And so you see a push for this in K-12 education right now with school vouchers, which is that we want education to be privatized. It's not a public good. And so what you see here, I believe, is an attempt to privatize education. And I'm sure it'll be for profit. And, you know, he didn't speak to that. And so this is a part of that sort of classic playbook, because when something is in the public realm, it's a public good. And so what you see here is really an attempt to privatize education is by all indications.
I want to go to Russell Vogt, head of the Office of Management and Budget, who was architect of Project 2025, the radical playbook to seize executive power, radically reshape federal agencies. Last year, undercover reporters with the Center for Climate Reporting recorded Vogt discussing his plan.
I am opposed to the Department of Education because I think it's the Department of Critical Race Theory.
That was Vogt speaking on television. I want to go now in response to the threats to DEI programs and LGBTQ outreach from the Trump administration to the president of Mount Holyoke, Danielle Holley, who recently said to basically comply with things that are not within our values simply because we feel a threat of investigation is something that we should not be doing as the higher education community. Instead, we need to just say no. Here's what we stand for. We will continue to stand for this. And if you believe that you can legally challenge our mission or our values, that's up to you to try to do. the president of Mount Holyoke said, who herself is African American. Julian Vasquez Heilig, if you can tell us what is happening right now across the country, this whole idea of obeying in advance, and, you know, because of the very real threat of